It's been Thanksgiving, and there are some turkeys that we need to cook. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst, and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Hey, Barry. It's great to be back with you on this. Actually, we're recording on Thanksgiving Day, which is probably something we shouldn't be doing, but we're doing it anyway, so we can get a show out today. I hope you folks are out there and you're not being buried in the whole Black Friday, Black Saturday. I realize you're listening to this on Saturday. And by the way, this is for Saturday, 11/24/2018. I hope you're not being just bombarded with this. I'll be quite honest, Barry. Some of the ads are becoming very blatant about come on into our, we start Thursday at 4 p.m. and that kind of thing. And they're supposed to be funny, but I find myself not laughing at these ads where people are like giving people, you know, instant pudding and TV dinners so they can get them out of the house so they can go shopping on Thanksgiving Day.
Right.
What's the purpose of Thanksgiving?
Well, the purpose of Thanksgiving is to reflect upon the gratefulness that we have that we exist as a nation. I mean, honestly, Chuck, we're the only ones who are celebrating Thanksgiving Day. France is not celebrating it. Great Britain is not celebrating it. Russia is certainly not celebrating it. China doesn't celebrate it, neither Korea. And our friends to the north in Canada really don't celebrate it either. We're the ones who celebrate Thanksgiving Day because we are grateful to God for his providential care for the first settlers who came here, starting with, if you really want to go back farther, going back to Jamestown and other places, and of course the Mayflower Pilgrims and how they survived that first year here. Many of them died off when they tried an experiment in socialism that completely failed, and then realized that a capitalist, or you have to earn to live, mentality had to be the one to be able to survive in the new environment that they found themselves in.
Well, it's interesting you say that, you know, they lived out of the common storehouse, which we know happened. I want to make one correction. You said that our neighbors to the north don't have Thanksgiving Day. Yeah, they do. But it's not the same day.
Okay. You're okay. You got me on that one.
Yeah, they're in October.
Okay. That's true.
And it's not necessarily quite the same thing, but they do a Thanksgiving Day.
Well, yeah, they're still experimenting with socialism. They haven't tossed it to the side like we did.
Well, you know, there are people up there who are getting kind of fed up with it, and Justin Trudeau is still the prime minister and all that, but he can't seem to buy any good press. And there's good reason, because he's a numbskull. He's the perfect offspring of his father, Margaret Trudeau and Pierre Trudeau, who were... Oh my gosh. I mean, he was prime minister forever up there in the 70s, 60s and 70s. And he was a mess, but my gosh, the offspring certainly have outdone the parents.
Yes.
He's a real piece of work. But nonetheless, there are people in Canada who are rapidly growing tired, especially in the western provinces, who are rapidly growing tired of essentially everything revolving around Toronto and Ottawa. Ottawa being the capital of Canada, and Toronto being the major city. If you've ever been to Toronto, it's an interesting place. I would recommend that you visit Toronto. It really is an interesting city. But this is what happens when essentially more than 10% of your population lives in one city in a country. And that city then begins to think that everything revolves around it. And that's exactly what has happened in Toronto. If it's not good for Toronto, it's not good for Canada. And the rest of Canada is saying, well, if it's not good for the rest of Canada, too bad for Toronto. So you've got that sort of city flyover country problem going on, just essentially like we have here. Los Angeles, New York, Washington, D.C., San Francisco, and certain other large cities basically think, well, you country bumpkins just need to shut up and support us and let us run the country, which is, thank goodness, why we have an electoral college to keep that from happening. Because let's face it, if we let them take over and run, we'd be essentially out here in the country would be working to support all the socialistic schemes that New York, Los Angeles, D.C., and a few other big cities could come up with. And in fact, one of the reasons you see everybody so hopping mad over the election results in 2016 is because the Electoral College did what it's supposed to do, and that is dampen gross overvotes in areas to alleviate the idea that regionalism should hold sway, and that regionalism, in other words, large overvotes in Los Angeles and New York, should have elected Hillary Clinton, but it didn't. Why? Because the rest of flyover country voted for Donald Trump.
Well, this is true.
And that's what's going on. Now we didn't start there, and I kind of got there. But the fact is that we're seeing these things, Canada's seeing these things, and they do have a Thanksgiving Day, and it really is more of a harvest thing.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you what, Chuck, if we're not careful here in the U.S., we might end up going to that as well, because I don't know if you saw, there was an article just the other day, and honestly, I'd have to go back and take a look. I think it might have been on the Drudge Report or others, but it was the results of a poll which showed that a majority of college students believe that Thanksgiving is racist.
I saw that.
A racist holiday, and that we shouldn't. It's sort of like Columbus Day. You know, they've now decided that regardless of what good came out of anything, they can go back and rewrite the history books in order to make us ashamed of our past. And again, let's put it this way. I'm not one of these gloss over specialists who thinks that America, love it or leave it, we can do no wrong kind of thing. Yes, there were a lot of faults that were made by many, but it wasn't all a one-sided affair either. So, okay, let's balance it out. And the fact that we've had a tradition in this country to reflect on, and actually, I think the big problem is, Chuck, and it's very, this is my analysis of it. It isn't so much that they're so offended and take up the plight of the poor Native Americans as much as it is the revulsion about the idea of publicly acknowledging that there is a God who is in control of the affairs of men and that has providentially superintended not only this country but the world, but especially this country, through a lot of things to the point where we have had success and prosperity. There have been a almost knee-jerk reaction to the idea of Christianity in this culture now that we are starting to move toward the every man is doing what is right in his own eyes view, just like that was happened during the Old Testament times. And so, of course, you have to stop and wonder, Chuck, because you and I both have children who have gone through school and some who are of college age and some who are even gone through college already, but that many of these colleges are basically hiring leftist radicals who are spiritual descendants of the leftists of the 60s, who are filling young people's heads full of this idea that we should be ashamed of our heritage. We should certainly be ashamed to be a Christian because of how horrible Christianity is and how much of a myth that is, that there's a God and that he cares and he superintends over our lives. So celebrating Thanksgiving is just an extension of this radical, religious, fundamentalist, patriarchal oppression that they've all come to know and loathe.
Well, that's exactly it. There's no middle ground. You and I could easily admit that white people that came to this country made a lot of mistakes in dealing with the native population.
Oh, absolutely. And there's no doubt about it. But the point is
we can also admit that natives made a lot of mistakes dealing with the white population.
Exactly. I was going to say that shoe fits on both feet.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. So, yeah, have there been Christian activities on both ends? Yeah, there sure have. And the idea that somehow we should completely bowdlerize or sanitize our history is just as wrong as the idea that we should emphasize all the negative parts. I don't think we should emphasize all the negative parts.
Well, you know, Chuck, that's I want to focus on some of the positives of Thanksgiving as well. But obviously, it's really hard to do so. I mean, because as we were going into Thanksgiving, what we were hearing, you know, not only from campus leftists, but from even from the federal government, from the CDC, was Thanksgiving's a dangerous, dangerous holiday because we had warnings that were put up by the Centers for Disease Control. Now, one of them, okay, I'll give you that. The recall on romaine lettuce, which happened again, second time this has happened inside of a year, I think, that basically they had an outbreak of E. coli that had sickened 32 people across 11 states. And the only thing they could find in common was romaine lettuce, but they couldn't find a common supplier, they couldn't find a common producer, outlet, anything of that nature yet. Now, by the time this airs, they may have announced something by Friday or so that they figured that out, but basically on Tuesday, I think, the call went out to don't eat any type of romaine lettuce, no matter where you got it from, for anything, because, well, you could be playing Russian roulette.
And E. coli, E. coli is bad news.
Yes, it is. It is, absolutely.
It's a strain called E. coli O157, and this has been a major problem with food processing for several years. And when I was a food sterilization specialist, this was a big thing. And I'm talking in the 90s, in the mid-90s, I was a food sterilization specialist. This was a big deal. And it's nasty. It's a particularly nasty organism. And can it kill you? Yes, it can. It sure can.
Yeah.
But where does it come from? Well, I know in the meat industry, a lot of times, believe it or not, it comes from employees not washing their hands when they're processing meat.
Right.
But this is romaine lettuce, which means that very possibly, somehow, it's come in contact with animal products.
Possibly, yes.
Possibly. On this large a scale, that seems to be the most likely thing. Now, epidemiologists are interesting people because they have to sit around and think about where the contamination may have come from. And you have to think in terms of a knowledge of how things like lettuce are processed. It could be that it was sprayed with a fertilizer that contained animal droppings.
Well, it could also be that they prepped the fields with manure and somehow didn't do that properly.
But E. coli normally would not last through a growing season.
No, probably not. But there's also another potential factor, Chuck, and that is in many of these places on large-scale farming operations, they bring in workers who sometimes work long, long hours in the fields trying to get, because they get paid by the box of produce that they get done. And so sometimes it costs you money to have to leave the field to go over and find a bathroom.
Yeah.
It's not a pretty thought, but it does happen. And so you could end up having point source contamination from that as well. But as far as that goes with this, I mean, it could also have been, you know, there are numerous ways in which our food chain is susceptible to having this kind of incident happen. I've always done this, Chuck. Every once in a while, I'll sit back and I'll think through how we get, like, our food, our water, our fuel, et cetera, and our electricity. And you stop and you think about it. Those are very fragile networks.
Yes.
That are extremely susceptible to interruptions or to intrusions into that network, creating lots of downstream problems. If you take a look at this, the E. coli. Okay, this may have been in one field at one production facility, and it just so happened that because that producer was sending produce to a national chain, it got spread over, well, right now, 11 states. And people drew the E. coli lottery ticket by buying romaine lettuce from their local grocer that they frequent that just so happens to come from this production facility, which happened to buy it from this grower in this particular field that had something go wrong. But since the CDC can't nail that down very quickly, they send out a notice that you need to pull and pitch all romaine lettuce, which hurts the entire industry. One bad player can hurt the industry, but it also, it sets a situation up like, okay, then you see upticks in the sale of green leaf lettuce or red leaf lettuce or bib lettuce or buttercrisp lettuce or spinach even, because people who, and I, you know, so I didn't mention iceberg because I really don't see iceberg as lettuce. I see that as just like fake. But
I like iceberg lettuce and I don't like romaine. So,
see, I'm the other way around. Yeah. I'll eat the romaine before I'll touch the iceberg.
Yeah.
Well, and the point is, I can report that up until the just like day before yesterday, when the advice to pitch it all, I had been eating romaine lettuce on things like for 4 or 5 days, and I'm now past the 48-hour mark for E. coli bacteria to have colonized in me.
Hate to tell you this, good. 8 days, dude.
8 days, okay. Well, they were saying that like it was up to 2 days, so
up to eight.
Okay. Well, if I get horribly sick by Monday, then I'll know something was up. So.
Yeah, well, no, hold on. The CDC also says we shouldn't be eating turkey this Thanksgiving. So,
see, yeah, well, that's the other problem, okay, because what we've had is there has been a recall by the Jennie-O company, and many people, that's a brand that they know and they trust and they pick up. Thousands of pounds of turkey has been recalled from stores, but the CDC is doubling down, basically saying, well, there was a salmonella outbreak, but we can't identify a single supplier of live or raw turkey products as the source of the outbreak. But they're not calling for a full recall. I think Jennie-O just did that, I think, as a response measure, knowing that at least one issue has been traced back to them. So they're not doing it for public safety reasons. They're doing it for covering themselves from a lawsuit reason. Which is fine. That's legitimate, too. But I am definitely rolling the dice on this one. I'm eating turkey on Thanksgiving. By Saturday, you hear that you get a report that I've been rushed to the hospital, then you know we got hit with that, too.
Chances are pretty good that Alan knows how to cook a turkey. This is the real problem. The real problem is that there are people out there who maybe have never cooked a turkey before, who don't know that you really can't put the stuffing inside the bird, who don't know that how to cook it properly, what temperatures that the breast meat has to get to before it's really cooked inside. There are all kinds of things that can happen with people who have never cooked turkey before or only do it once or twice a year, mistakes that can be made. And that's the real issue. Now, I looked at the numbers, Barry. 100 people nationwide have gotten sick from turkey. 100 people in a nation, 330 million people. What does that tell you? I understand they want the number of food poisonings to be zero, and thank God for that. But having everybody having a screaming paranoia fit because 100 people got problems, it wasn't E. coli, I don't think it was salmonella maybe. Well, look, that just means they didn't know how to cook the turkey. The bottom line, learn how to cook a turkey. And if you don't know, my gosh, in this day and age, go to YouTube. They'll give you somebody will tell you how to cook a turkey properly and what all to check to make sure it's okay. This isn't this isn't even like 1999. We do have the internet and we have things where you can go and get that kind of information.
Well, absolutely, and one of the things that they may tell you is make sure that your oven is working properly when you cook a turkey.
Yeah, well, we had that problem recently, although we caught the fact that our turkey, we had the bottom element of a stove go out and didn't realize it. The top's all brown and everything that's underneath is all pink. We're like, well, what is this all about? Well, we had an element burned out in our stove, so replaced the element, cooked the turkey, continued cooking the turkey, and everything came out just fine.
Well, I don't think I have any fear because my mother, who's been cooking for all of my life and most of hers, is doing our Thanksgiving today. So I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be very good. Now, on the upside, Chuck, I saw an article that basically said that this year the cost of a Thanksgiving dinner was actually down this year. But then again, I don't know if that factors in the extra costs now of having the recalls of turkey and of romaine lettuce and things of that nature. The price of Thanksgiving dinner falls to the lowest level in a decade. So the lowest level we've had in the last 10 years. Now, Chuck, think about this. 10 years ago, who was in office?
Barack Obama.
No, 10 years ago.
Oh, 10. Well, it would have been the end of George or
George Bush's George term. W. That's
Bush's
right.
Term.
And so now this that we now have the lowest level in 10 since the last year of George Bush's term, we now have the cost of Thanksgiving being the lowest it's been in that decade. So basically they're saying it right now, the average cost of this year's feast for 10, so they use it on the, that's their framework of 10 to feed 10 people, is $48.90 or $4.89 a person. It's a 22 cent decrease from the average last year. I believe that, let's see, I'm trying to see where they show the figures from 10 years ago. And of course you have to adjust for inflation. I'm aware of that, that's for sure. But basically it says that the average cost of Thanksgiving dinner has been declining steadily and is now at its lowest level since 2010. So they only go back to, so that's not fully a decade. That's only 8 years.
Yeah.
So we're moving around here and looking at, so basically if you're out there and you've bought Thanksgiving, hopefully this is the numbers that maybe you paid for it. Basically a turkey comes in at $21.71 for a 16 pound bird. That's $1.36 a pound. That's down 3%. So that's the lowest. The retail turkey prices are the lowest since 2014. So, and again, we have to wonder how any kind of a recall is going to affect that. May affect our Christmas. I don't know if you do turkey for Christmas or not, or if you're like some people, you do goose or you do ham or things of that nature.
There are all kinds of traditions, that localized traditions. Yeah.
Yes, yeah, I know for Christmas I usually try to do something like a standing rib roast because I'm not a big ham fan, and I've never really kind of found a goose that works. So basically, here is from the Farm Bureau, basically they laid out their menu for this Thanksgiving dinner that's going to be so inexpensive. It includes turkey, stuffing, sweet potatoes, rolls with butter, peas, cranberries, a veggie tray, pumpkin pie with whipped cream, coffee, and milk, all in quantities sufficient to serve a family of 10 with plenty for leftovers. So, okay, I want to eat with the Farm Bureau because that sounds pretty good. But they're saying that basically to buy for 10, that's not going to take a whole lot of money. Like I said, they're coming in at $48.90 or less than $5 a person. Now, Chuck, when's the last time you took anybody out anywhere, fast food or any place, where it came in at less than $5 a person?
In the 1980s, maybe? No.
Thank you very much.
I'm kidding. It's been a while. Yeah, it's been a while.
So, and I'm looking at these numbers, and I'm thinking, boy, we didn't even pay that much for some of this stuff. I mean, yeah, I talked to the turkey, 16-pound turkey for $21.71. Let's see here. They say a gallon of milk, $2.92. I think I can get it cheaper at Aldi's. A 3-pound bag of sweet potatoes, $3.39. Yeah, that may be in the ballpark. A 1-pound bag of green peas, $1.47, and a dozen rolls for 2 1/4. Basically, but they said that some things are a little higher. You see, a 12-ounce bag of fresh cranberries with $2.65. I would suggest to the Farm Bureau to go to Aldi's. They're 99 cents a bag at Aldi's for fresh cranberries, so it's good stuff. 30-ounce can of pumpkin pie mix was $3.33. Well, if you just get pumpkin and not the pie mix, which is got a lot of additives in it, it's a lot cheaper. 14-ounce package of cube bread stuffing was $2.87, but you know you can buy a loaf of bread and cut it up on your counter and let it set out overnight to be to get a little stale, and you can make your own stuffing for a lot cheaper than that.
Yeah, you can.
2 9-inch pie shells. Oh, come on, people, make your own pie, make your own crust. Let's don't go and buy the shells. And a 1-pound veggie tray was $0.75. Well, you know what? I could make a 3-pound veggie tray with, you know, the your standard things with broccoli and cauliflower and radishes and carrots and celery and a little bit of dip in the middle and things. And you make a really nice tray and probably spend $3 or $4 at the most and have a nice tray. I'm not sure where a 1-pound veggie tray for 75 cents can be found, but that's okay. And of course, then the miscellaneous items, including coffee, sugar, and butter, evaporated milk, onions, eggs, sugar, and flour, which is all to add into the stuff. Although I'm not sure why you need the flour if you're buying pie shells, was also up slightly to about $3.01 for what it would take to feed a group of 10. No change in the price for a half pint of whipping cream. So, yes, go get your Cool Whip and ladle it not sparingly upon your pumpkin pie or upon anything else you like to put it on for your Thanksgiving meal. Me, Chuck, I like having a big scoop of vanilla bean ice cream on top of my pumpkin pie. I'm not the biggest whipped cream fan, so I like the ice cream on it.
Yeah.
So my Thanksgiving dinner is probably a little bit more expensive. But then again, I'm saving money, I think, on the bread stuffing and on the cranberries. So maybe I'm even coming in a little bit better than that. So it's good. But that's an upside, a good positive thing. Now, Chuck, there are some, we're going to switch now from talking about Thanksgiving and all this fun stuff around it, including salmonella recalls and E. coli recalls and how to save money with your shopping tips. Yes, we are a full-service radio program, and we're going to talk over about a little bit of other things that are going on, because there are some people who are acting like turkeys right now. I hate to say it, but and there are some people who should get a little bit of a reward. First thing up, and this is one we hadn't talked about beforehand, but it's something that I realized that we should talk about, is that I believe you might have seen... Well, and you probably didn't, and I probably didn't either because I didn't watch it. But we might have seen the beginnings of the resurrection of professional football this week. There was a game, Chuck, the game, that was the Monday Night Football game of the week. And it was between the Kansas City Chiefs and the Los Angeles Rams, which used to be the St. Louis Rams, sadly. But and I guess before they were St. Louis Rams, they were the L.A. Rams, so they're back home again. So, you know, if you're a Rams fan, you're a little confused about what time zone you're in, but it's a good thing. As you know, Chuck, you know, from all the things with all the protests and the anthem kneeling and all of the bad PR that professional football has received, and I believe legitimately, they seem maybe to have flipped the script a little bit here, because... on Monday night, now again, now Chuck, this was a game that was actually supposed to have taken place in Mexico City. This was going to be like an early game over in London with a couple of NFL teams. They have a game in London, England. This one was going to be in Mexico City, but was the field conditions at the stadium in Mexico City were so bad that the NFL pulled it and said, we're not going to let these guys play here, because they knew it would just lead to injuries. And so they moved it to the L.A. Coliseum, home of the L.A. Rams. And it was a Donnybrook. They left all their defensive players in Mexico City for some reason or not. But this was like an offensive shootout between two high-powered offenses. And it set new records. It was a 54-51 score with the Rams prevailing over the Kansas City Chiefs. Okay. Now, does that make the redemption of, no, it does not. That does not make it the redemption of the NFL. What may have been part of it is, not only was that like a record setting night, and it was something that, you know, drew a lot of eyes because it actually did have great ratings, but that this was a game that the NFL decided to do something, I think, probably pretty shrewd from a marketing standpoint. They handed out free tickets to first responders and military veterans. They filled the stadium with police and fire and EMS personnel and active duty and military veterans. Chuck, gave them free tickets to this game. Now, say what you want to about Roger Goodell and the NFL, but this was pretty shrewd.
This was a smart move
on their part, considering the fact that this was a reschedule and they had to scramble, because think about it. You probably had tens of thousands of people who had bought tickets and they were going to Mexico City to watch this game. And they flipped the script and moved it to L.A., and I'm guessing a lot of those people, you know, probably decided, well, we're just going to go ahead and go to Mexico anyway, so they weren't going to be there for the game. So they gave away tickets to the same people that many of the players who are down there on the sidelines have been, shall we say, passively offending by taking a knee during the national anthem as a protest against police brutality or military intervention, whatever the cause du jour is for them today. But I think that this actually might have been something that was pretty interesting as a way for the NFL to try to make some amends, to try to heal their damaged reputation, to do some positive PR spin. And they just so happens that you ended up with a massive shootout game, which registered a 11.3 audience share. And then with the late finish, the final drive of the game registered a 12.5 share. So you had a lot of people watching football, which is not something that's been happening lately.
Right, that's true.
Most of the games, a lot of people have turned off, turned away from, stopped paying any attention to. But because the Rams organization and the NFL decided to do this, basically, if you had a family or military connection to the state of California, or somebody who died while serving in the armed forces, or who died from injuries sustained while serving post 9/11 era, they paid tribute to them, and that the players wore the initials of a fallen hero on their helmets, and the families were recognized during the game. That is a smart business move.
Finally,
a smart business move from the NFL, because they've not been making too many of those lately.
Oh, they've been making some major whoppers, mistakes by the ton. And the problem, really, we blame Goodell. Goodell's the front man. The reason that Goodell has a contract is because the owners hire him. What's that tell you about NFL ownership? If what Goodell does is okay with the owners, now there are a few outliers. I think Jerry Jones from the Dallas Cowboys doesn't like Goodell very much, and there are a couple other guys that don't like him. But they're in the minority. And they have also been threatened with fines and possibility of, you know, underneath the veiled threat is you lose your franchise.
Yes. And it's very interesting that the article notes that basically this whole protest movement has calmed down a great deal this year, that there are only a few players who are actually protesting and they're not really getting much attention, because I think the NFL and the owners probably realized this isn't about the players, it's about the fans, and because they're the ones who are buying this tickets, they're the ones who are paying the salaries, you know, they're the ones who are ginning up the ad revenue, because, well, why would you buy $1 million 30-second ad or $2 million, whatever it is now, for a Super Bowl if you didn't think that the vast majority of people were going to affiliate your brand with something positive? If they have negative feelings about what's going on in the NFL and they feel disrespected by these players, especially first responders, servicemen, police officers, etc., that doesn't do well for you as a retailer for your bottom line either. If people start saying, I'm not going to drink Budweiser anymore because they advertise on the Super Bowl, or, you know, they support the NFL, and I think the NFL is actively attacking my livelihood and what I choose to do to serve my country, well, you know, it isn't going to be too long before they won't have any advertisers. You know, because advertisers respond to pressure. We know that boycotts do work, folks. Okay, but even passive boycotts work. If you've got, just take a look, Chuck. How many advertisers pull anytime controversy shows up around a program? Usually
lots.
You hear about the conservative programs, but it's in the liberal programs too. You have advertisers that'll pull out in a heartbeat if something controversial starts happening, because they don't want their brands tainted by what's going on with the ultimate focus of the dissatisfaction, whether that be a radio or TV program or host, or whether it be, you know, take a look at how many advertisers pulled out of House of Cards when it was revealed that Kevin Spacey was a homosexual pedophile.
Well, just a predator.
Well, it's getting clearer and clearer by the day that he probably did, you know, try to engage and force himself on an underage.
Oh
male.
Yeah. Oh, so, I, yeah. I don't want to soften the blow on that. No, That's what
happened. But how many advertisers yanked out? And think about it.
A lot.
That's a Netflix series. So right. It's like, what did that? Netflix was like, what? Wait, what? So.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's what. You don't think Netflix was aware? I mean, the production side was aware that Kevin Spacey had an issue. Let's not kid ourselves. They knew.
Probably did, but you know, it's but the whole thing is that, like I said, coming back around, is that, you know, kudos to both the LA Rams organization and to NFL and Roger Goodell for actually figuring this one out and doing something positive, which has one of the highest ratings that they've had since 2015, Chuck.
Now,
since right before this whole protest movement thing got started, their ratings have gone into the dump. And this has been the highest rated. This was the highest rated, I think, Monday night or maybe football broadcast.
In probably at least 2 years, maybe
two
longer.
2.5 years.
Yeah. Now, let me bring something up, though, that may bring this into sharper focus. The NFL Players Association collective bargaining agreement expires in 2020.
Aha.
What do you have to have to get a bigger piece of the pie during the negotiations in 2019?
Well, you have to show that you're driving ratings.
You have to show that you've got the revenue to meet the demands for payment. Now, what do players know? If people aren't tuning in, because the biggest hunk of NFL revenue is
TV. TV.
You bet it is. It's TV contracts. What are people starting to go to the NFL to say to them, we need to renegotiate these contracts because nobody is watching? You don't think maybe that had something to do with it?
Oh, I think it had quite a bit.
I think it had a lot to do with it. Okay, think in terms of, I don't know if you've heard the controversy or not, and maybe not, because let's face it, we don't pay much attention to this. The women's NBA, the WNBA.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. I pay no attention to it.
Yes.
That's okay.
The WNBA is demanding pay parity with the men. What's wrong with this picture? The WNBA, it is a millstone around the neck of the NBA. In other words, not only does it not, it's a feel-good, politically correct thing. They were absolutely positive they were going to build this this market for women's basketball through the WNBA when it started, I don't know how many years ago, like 22 years ago or something. They've carried this thing for 22 years at a tremendous loss. I mean, no NBA franchise makes money on its WNBA, its sponsored team. Now we've got women who are demanding that they be paid on an equal basis with the men, despite the fact that they're not generating the revenue. Well, that's very 2000s or, you know, 2010s, politically correct. But the fact is, you don't get paid unless you generate the revenue. If my business doesn't make money, everybody gets paid except who?
You.
Me. Why? Because as far as I'm concerned, obligations are to pay all my bills and mm-hmm. employee salaries before I pay myself.
Absolutely.
Have I come close to that? Yeah, there was a spot in 2013 where we got very close to the wire that I wasn't going to be able to have a couple paychecks. I wasn't sure exactly what I was going to do. That being said, the NFL players are beginning to see the, we've now created the monster. How do we keep the monster chained up in the laboratory? And the answer is, just like in Frankenstein, how well did Dr. Frankenstein do in keeping his creation chained up in the laboratory?
Not well at all.
Not well at all. And what did it do? In the book, it came back and killed him. It destroyed him. It's that's still a possibility, because I'll tell you what, a strike in 2019 would probably very close to drive a stake through the heart of this beast. Yeah, they've got better ratings, but they're still not very good. And I can tell you, a lot of people, when the last strike was, which was I think was in 2011, and yes. I think it was the longest strike in NFL history, a lot of people tuned out and never tuned back in. That's what's going to happen. A lot more people will tune out and never tune back in. Where are they going to go? They're going to go back to the college game, which is why you see the college. a lot of colleges are saying, hey, look, and they're going to go to college basketball, and they're going to go to other, you know, then they'll go to baseball. College football can fill that gap very easily without some of the same problems, same PR problems. Why? Because the schools won't let it happen. So this is a complex puzzle. You know, it's like one of those 10,000 piece puzzles of the Chicago skyline or something.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
The Chicago skyline at night, which there's a lot of black in, and you got to figure out what piece goes where. This is one of those. And I don't think the NFL has anybody to blame but themselves.
You're probably right. Now, again, you know, you mentioned that whole about people leaving and not coming back. Even though this was a great PR move for them, it doesn't really, you know, raise my... I used to watch football a lot, okay? I don't anymore. I quit. This whole thing just got to be... You know, you had too many prima donnas. You had too many, I guess you could say...
Too much roid rage.
Too much taking advantage of, or, you know, taking for granted who your real audience was. And really, it just got to be completely boring. So, but then this whole thing with the protest movement just really kind of set it all off and said, nope, we're not doing that anymore.
Which honestly never made any sense. We're not protesting the flag or denigrating the flag. We're protesting police shooting black men. Okay, it doesn't make any sense because police are local employees. We're drawing attention to it. The only thing you've drawn attention to is yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
You talk to people, they don't even remember in a lot of cases why those protests went on. And all they know is that the United States and the flag were disrespected.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it gets down to. So, I want to kind of switch over here, and because we're still talking about turkeys, and and honestly, a lot of these turkeys started trying to fly around the election. And one of the biggest turkeys, I think, and they're still flapping their wings even after the election is over, settled, and the recount has been done, is Georgia gubernatorial candidate Stacey Abrams. Stacey Abrams was a Democrat. She ran, and she was expecting to get into a runoff election, and it came down fairly close to the wire, but Brian Kemp, who was the Republican, he was the Secretary of State running for governor, had edged over the line just by, you know, tenths of a percentage point, over 50%. And so, again, and I don't fault Stacey Abrams or her team for this, but, you know, they wanted to wait until provisionals were counted. They wanted to wait and get and see, you know, if it was close enough for a recount before she conceded the election that she had lost. Well, we came in, provisionals and absentee votes came in, Brian Kemp still won. Recount, Brian Kemp still won. It became obvious to everybody in both Georgia and in the country that the new governor of the state of Georgia is Brian Kemp. Obvious to everybody except Stacey Abrams, who even to this day has not formally conceded the race, and who is now, as we've seen this week, is now spinning a new top to see if she can get people to pay attention to it. And, of course, the first thing we saw came out on Tuesday, where she basically claimed that a poll worker in her precinct almost didn't let her vote. Now, Chuck, I say the word almost because that's how, shall we say, ludicrous this really is getting to be. She's moaning and groaning that she had problems at her poll. Now, again, Chuck, this came out on Tuesday, the 20th. When was the election?
The 6th.
14 days earlier. So, instead of making a complaint about this, maybe within the 24 hours after it happened, or the same day, or suggesting that, you know, during the counts of absentees and provisionals that there may have been a problem, she waits until after everything's said and done, and that it's clear and obvious and official that she is not the winning candidate, and all of a sudden she's coming up with, oh, well, I think that I almost was not allowed to vote. And she said, the day I voted, I had to correct the poll worker who said I had filed for an absentee ballot. Now, the question is, Chuck, did she or did she not file for an absentee ballot?
Yeah, that's the real question, isn't it?
That is the real question in this whole thing. But, you know, this is only coming from Stacey Abrams because the elections officials are not, you know, they're not publicly saying anything about it because they're just like, yeah, this is all over with, okay? But she blamed her problems at the polls on the flaws in the U.S. voting system. And she had privilege enabling her to cast her vote while other less off Americans do not. Well, you know what she's trying to say, right, Chuck?
Yeah. Yes, I know exactly what she's trying to say. She's trying to race bait. The problem being that there were other people, including white people, who had the same problem. Except when you look at the cases closely, it looks like someone falsely applied for absentee ballots for other people.
Exactly. And, you know, very well, she could have either, yes, she did apply for an absentee ballot, or no, she didn't, but somebody else did that she did not know about.
Exactly.
Or there was an error in the record that the poll worker had in front of them, which can happen as well. But the point is that, Chuck, first of all, she voted.
Exactly.
She cast a ballot. At the poll, it took a few minutes for me to cast my ballot, she said. Oh, okay, well, Chuck, it took my son a few minutes to cast a ballot because, you know, he's one of these young people who've decided that he doesn't really need to go anywhere right now, so he doesn't want to go out and get his driver's license. So he has his Selective Service registration, which is used as ID. But because the system won't take that card, you know, because it doesn't have the
right
magnetic stripe on the back where they've now kept all of our information. If you think about it, when you go to the polling place, they can swipe your driver's license to show that you're there to vote. Well, those Selective Service registration cards don't have that kind of a data code on them, and so he had to vote provisional. So it took him more than a few minutes to cast a ballot. Did he cast a ballot? Absolutely did. You know, is it a problem? No, it wasn't a problem. It was the, okay, let's figure this out, and you sit down there and you cast your ballot on paper rather than punching buttons on a machine. It was no big problem. But to her, oh, this is emblematic to her of the privilege that she has. And that for us to have a fair fight in Georgia, we have to ensure that no one runs the risk of being denied the right to vote. Now, Stacey Abrams obviously is, you know, she's not being denied the right to vote. She did vote. She did vote. It was just, okay, well, we got to make sure we're missing something here. Looks like it was filed for an absentee ballot for you. Well, no, I got it. Okay, so I did. All right, fine. Then here's a ballot. Go vote. But now she's moaning and groaning and complaining about it. And, of course, she's also hired a team of lawyers, Chuck.
36
lawyers. That's right, 36 lawyers to challenge the results. And, of course, she's now admitted she's lost the election, but she is already now saying she's going to sue the state of Georgia for gross mismanagement of the election. Gross mismanagement, Chuck. Okay, we're not sure of the record here, but we're going to allow you to vote anyway. So she was she denied the right to vote by allowing to cast her ballot?
Barry,
this is ludicrous. And again, of course, it's going to get a little stranger too, Chuck, because that's part A of this, the flapping of the turkey wings on Stacey Abrams. Now she's doubling down because here she's also in a forum on MSNBC.
There's a shock.
Shock that they're giving her airtime. Basically, on their all-in program, she came out and basically said that the gubernatorial election in Georgia were not free and fair. And she said this, and I quote, "It was not a free and fair election. We had thousands of Georgians who were purged from the rolls wrongly." Why? Because they were dead? And she says, including a 92-year-old woman who voted in the same area since 1968, a civil rights leader. "It was not fair to the thousands who were forced to wait in long lines because they were in polling places that were under-resourced, or worse, they had no polling places to go to because more than 300 had been closed." Chuck, have you ever had a situation where, you know, your polling precinct has been merged into another one because of, you know, that's what the Board of Elections or the Secretary of State have decided? I've had that happen. Oftentimes it happens after you redistrict, you know, and people forget where they're supposed to vote. Now, I don't know if Georgia has gone through any kind of redistricting lately or what their time frame is for redistricting, but it very well could be that these polling places may have, quote-unquote, been closed because the facility, whether it was a school or a business or some civic area, decided they just didn't want to hassle with it anymore. And there was a polling place open nearby. Or that you go there and where you thought you were in X precinct was like, well, no, those boundary lines shifted with the last census, so you're now in this precinct. And even if that precinct wasn't at that polling place, you could still provision polling place to the other polling place in the new precinct in which you are, which you're registered. Those things happen. So she goes into this and she's like, oh, it's not fair to the thousands who've been put on hold with their registrations. Again, this is another claim that I don't see any backing for. Is there an actual lawsuit right now that says that there were people's voter registrations that were held up? Usually they only hold a voter registration so they can check it to make sure it isn't a duplicate registration.
Yeah, exactly. Look, this is the big hue and cry, and we saw what the result of this was in some states who have implemented it. Everybody, they all want to go to instant voter registration.
Yeah.
So, what's the reason for that? So illegals and people who aren't eligible to vote can vote. Some of it sounds attractive, especially to people who really think that the United States of America is a democracy and not a federal republic. But the fact is, we are a federal republic and we're a republic of laws, and we do control voting for the simple fact that we understand that if you just willy-nilly hand out the right to vote, voting isn't a right, by the way, it's a privilege. It's a privilege of citizenship. But absolutely, if we just willy-nilly hand out the privilege of the vote, then people will vote themselves all kinds of things, like goodies out of other people's pockets and that kind of thing. The fact is that this is a thinly veiled attack on the electoral system. What it's an attempt to do is to federalize the state election apparatus. And what will happen is, I can almost guarantee this, it'll be a civil rights thing. They'll try to get the Justice Department to come in and say, well, we have to run your election apparatus because it's racist at its core, which is the basis of her claim. Now, all you have to do is look down at that mess in Broward County and in Palm Beach County. In Broward County, it was Brenda Snipes, who basically, I don't know if you heard it or not. You probably did because you and I read some of the same stuff. That Brenda Snipes, who was the head of elections in Broward County, resigned after the debacle that she created down there in attempting to steal the election for the Democratic candidates for Senate
for
governor.
Ben Nelson and Andrew Gillum.
But also the state agriculture commissioner, which we talked right. about because he's in charge of concealed carry permits. The quote that she said when she handed in her resignation was, "I've done what I came here to do."
Yep.
What does that mean? Steal an election? You know, you didn't quite pull it off. You came close. Finding hundreds of thousands of ballots after you've already turned in the total number of ballots counted is pretty scary, if you ask me. This woman, if not actively attempting to steal an election, was so grossly incompetent, she had no business being in charge of the election process in any county system. Because, let's face it, these things, and we're running short on time, but these things have to be done at local levels for the simple reason that it's impossible to do to count tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of votes from Washington, D.C. It can't be done. You have to have local laws to deal with how voting goes. Not to mention yep. the fact that we are a federal republic, which
Absolutely.
Means that the states are in charge of their own election apparatus.
Okay. Well, Chuck, to close us out here, I would like to take a moment or three to read President Trump's proclamation that he has given for Thanksgiving, because I think it really, I want to put a high note at the end of this. So we talked about the reason for Thanksgiving at the front end, and now I want to talk about why we're still celebrating it today. So this is the presidential proclamation on Thanksgiving Day 2018 by President Trump. And it goes like this. It says, "On Thanksgiving Day, we recall the courageous and inspiring journey of the pilgrims who, nearly four centuries ago, ventured across the vast ocean to flee religious persecution and establish a home in the New World. They faced illness, harsh conditions, and uncertainty as they trusted in God for a brighter future. The more than 100 pilgrims who arrived at Plymouth, Massachusetts on the Mayflower instilled in our nation a strong faith that continues to be a beacon of hope to all Americans. Thanksgiving Day is a time to pause and to reflect with family and friends on our heritage and the sacrifices of our forebears who secured the blessings of liberty for an independent, free, and united country. After surviving a frigid winter and achieving their first successful harvest in 1621, the pilgrims set aside 3 days to feast and give thanks to God for God's abundant mercy and blessings. Members of the Wampanoag tribe, who had taught the pilgrims how to farm in New England and helped them adjust and thrive in that new land, shared in the bounty and celebration. In recognition of that historic event, President George Washington in 1789 issued a proclamation declaring the first National Day of Thanksgiving. He called upon the people of the United States to unite in rendering unto God our sincere and humble gratitude, quote, for his kind care and protection of the people of this country and the favorable interpositions of his providence, unquote. President Abraham Lincoln revived this tradition as our fractured nation endured the horrors of the Civil War. Ever since, we have set aside this day to give special thanks to God for the many blessings, gifts, and love he has bestowed on us in our country. This Thanksgiving, as we gather in places of worship and around tables surrounded by loved ones in humble gratitude for the bountiful gifts we have received, let us keep in close memory our fellow Americans who have faced hardship and tragedy this year. In the spirit of generosity and compassion, let us joyfully reach out in word and deed and share our time and resources throughout our communities. Let us also find ways to give to the less fortunate, whether it be in the form of sharing a hearty meal, extending a helping hand, or providing words of encouragement. We are especially reminded on Thanksgiving of how the virtue of gratitude enables us to recognize, even in adverse situations, the love of God in every person, every creature, and throughout nature. Let us be mindful of the reasons we are grateful for our lives, for those around us, and for our communities. We also commit to treating all with charity and mutual respect, spreading the spirit of Thanksgiving throughout our country and across the world. Today, we particularly acknowledge the sacrifices of our service members, law enforcement personnel, and first responders who selflessly serve and protect our nation. This Thanksgiving, more than 200,000 brave American patriots will spend the holiday overseas away from their loved ones. Because of the men and women in uniform who volunteer to defend our liberty, we are able to enjoy the splendor of the American life. We pray for their safety and for the families who await their return. Now, therefore, I, Donald J. Trump, President of the United States of America, by virtue of the authority vested in me by the Constitution and the laws of the United States, do hereby proclaim Thursday, November 22nd, 2018, as a National Day of Thanksgiving. I encourage all Americans to gather in homes and places of worship to offer a prayer of thanks to God for our many blessings. In witness whereof, I have hereunto set my hand this 20th day of November in the year of our Lord, 2018, and of the Independence of the United States of America, the 243rd. That is the Presidential Proclamation for Thanksgiving Day, completely centrally focused on thanking God.
There you go. So,
and I think that's a great way to capstone this.
That it is. You know what we think? We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And please join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.